This week's parsha, we have the parsha of Az Yashir, which we have the schus to say every single day in our davening. So while it's always important to learn the parsha and to know what's going on, but this parsha specifically, since we get to say it every single day, even more important to learn through the psukim, understand what's going on over there. As an aside, Az Yashir is so important that we say it at the end of Psukei Dezimra. Somebody asked, why do we say it at the end of Psukei Dezimra? The Aruch HaShulchan speaks out. We should have said it in the beginning. I mean, all of Psukei Dezimra is Tehillim. We should have first started off with Psukim from the Torah and then gone into the in Tehillim. Why do we end off with Az Yashir? So he points out that if you look at the Rambam, in the Rambam Siddur, Az Yashir was recited after Yishtabach. Not like we have it. Az Yashir was said after Yishtabach, and the reason it was said after Yishtabach was because it had to be next to the Yotzer Or Vari Choshech, Oseh Shalom Uvreyes HaKol. It had to be part of Birchas Kriyat Shema, to be close to the Shema, to speak about Kriyas Yamsuf. Some hold that if you don't mention Kriyas Yamsuf, Mishnah Berurah brings us down, you're not Yotzeh even in the whole mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim that we have every single day. Az Yashir is really important. So the reason he suggested it was at the end of Psukei Dezimra is because really it was part of Shacharis, not really part of Psukei Dezimra. But Az Yashir is very important, an integral part of our davening. The words are a little hard, but it's definitely advisable to try to, you know, every day you can learn another word, and then you got the whole thing down pretty quickly. You get the Parshas B'Shalach, it goes smooth. So in the Az Yashir, the pasuk says in Perek Yidalet pasuk Chav Aleph, something very strange happened. Well, this is before the Az Yashir. It says, "Vayit Moshe es yado al hayam." Moshe put his hand by the sea. Vayolach Hashem esayam beruach kadim aza kol alayla. The night before of Kriyas Yamsuf, there was this intense wind that was blowing the whole night. Vayasem esayam lecharava, and that split the sea. And the question the Rishonim asked is, why did we need this intense wind the entire time? We actually say, in Az Yashir, the breath from your nostrils, the whole thing split open. I mean, there was this wind that occurred. Why did we need this wind? And the Rishonim say, the Ramban says over here in this week's parasha, Yidal Chaf Aleph, and the Sefer Chinuch writes this, and the Ran writes in the Drasha Saran, Baruch Hashem, they just came out with an art scroll version, so we could learn it in the art scroll, but They all say the same thing. They say that when it comes to miracles, Hashem produces certain miracles in order to make everything look natural. Meaning, to have open miracles, revealed miracles, Hashem always likes to hide the miracles. So a miracle like Kriyas Yamsuf, that's a pretty big miracle, Hashem likes to hide it. So what does he do? He goes ahead and he makes a very strong wind the entire night beforehand. And then people could say one day, you know, the reason the sea split was because there was this crazy wind that occurred, and scientifically, when you have a wind like that, it could split a sea, and they're able to give an explanation. Someone even told me that certain non-Jewish scientists actually wrote a report explaining about how this wind could have gone ahead and done that. Okay, we don't have to be so smart to realize that that's sounds pretty ridiculous. But so there was a strong wind. Why? To hide the miracle a little bit. And the Sefer HaChinuch writes that we find this by a lot of miracles. For example, there was a miracle that on the Mizbeach, on the altar, in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a fire that came down from the Shemayim, and it was there. But still, there was a mitzvah every single day for the Kohen to go ahead and light the Mizbeach. What do you have to light the Mizbeach? The fire is there anyway. In order to hide, disguise the miracle a little bit, so that people will say, oh yeah, it was because he lit it. So we like to go ahead and disguise the miracle. The Ramban writes in Parshas Noach that if anyone pays attention to the Psukim, they'll notice that it's impossible that they fit into the dimensions that are provided in the Torah for the Teva of Noach, that all of these animals fit in there. It's impossible. It needed a much, much bigger teva to fit all the animals in there. So it must have been a miracle. Okay, well, Hashem, if you're already making a miracle, then why couldn't the teva just been like a little small box and let the elephant and the tiger and everyone go in there? Why did he have to make a big one? So the answer is because it's big enough that you say, oh yeah, it's a big one. And like all the pictures have, you know, the giraffe's head sticking on the top and this one sticking out of the window. And it looks like, oh yeah, it must have happened. You start paying attention. The one's going like, whoa, how'd they fit in there? It's impossible. So the Hashem disguises the miracles. And the Sefer HaChinuch writes, that's the exact same reason why the wind blew. He blew, the wind blew in order to disguise the miracle. Why does Hashem want to disguise the miracle? What's the point? If you're already making a miracle, just let it be revealed. So here are the two different explanations that I saw that was given. The Sefer HaChinuch writes, because we're not holy enough to be able to experience the miracle, like Hashem's display of Himself, Kaviyachal, in such an intense way. We're not on that level, so therefore it gets minimized, the revelation of the miracle gets minimized a little bit. Rav Chatz Levenstein, he writes a different answer. He just says, because Hashem wants to give us free will. But if we have these open miracles, so even though after a second of thinking, you realize it's a miracle, but if it was just there without any thought, we'd have no free will because there's nothing pushing us to not follow Hashem. So Hashem disguises a little bit to allow us to continue to have free will. Of course, we have that free will, and we could choose, and we don't need to really think too hard in order to see that there's a miracle. But at least it's not like open, and hi, I'm here. And then all of a sudden we have to believe in Him. There has to be some element of us buying in and having free will. Okay. But the Ramban, excuse me, and the Ran, they say something a little bit different. Because they say, they point out, that when it comes to the, well, it's true, the Noach's Teva was big, but not that big to disguise the miracle. And like we said, with the lighting of the Mizbeach, etc. Hashem does this. This is a hanhaga, a way that Hashem acts. But when it came to Kriyas Yamsuf was part of taking us out of Mitzrayim. And the miracles by Yesias Mitzrayim were not hidden in any shape or form. Right? Even though we know that Hashem's always hiding miracles, Dan, Sardeya, Kinim, Arav, there was nothing hidden. And the reason nothing was hidden over there was because there Hashem was trying to show very clearly that He created the world and He runs the world and He has a relationship with us. That was the goal. So there was no hiding. There it was everything all out, all on the table, totally clear, out there, inspirational, buy-in forever. Our moon is based on that. That was the point. So Kriyas Yamsuf, the Ramban says, was part of that. And therefore, although it's true that normally the miracles are supposed to be hidden on some level, but when it came to Kriyas Yamsuf, that should have been in the group of the miracles that occurred in Mitzrayim, and it should have been opened and revealed. Okay? So then why did Hashem hide this miracle with an all-night wind the night before? So the Ramban of the Ran gives a new answer. They say, here we need a new explanation. This miracle should have been revealed. Why was it hidden? To help Paro and the Mitzrim go into the sea. If there would have been an open miracle, the sea just splitting up like that, there's no way they would have followed them in. But once there was this wind the whole night, so they said, wait a minute, the sea split. There was a natural occurrence of the sea splitting. So just like the Jews are walking through, we'll also walk through. If they would have realized that it was a miracle, that it was Hashem over there splitting the sea for them, so they wouldn't have gone in, because they would have said, oh boy, I see that Hashem and Bnei Yisrael are pretty tight right now. I'm staying away. I'm not going in. But once they had this way out to explain why this thing happened, so they said, okay, let's go get them. These are our slaves. We want them back. What did we do? Why did we let them go? We're going to go in to get them. So the Ramban and the Ran write that the point of the night wind, the night before, was in order to help trigger Paro and the Mitzrim going inside. And I saw, as was pointed out, that this could be a new pshat in a pasuk that we say in Az Yashir. The pasuk says, like I said, "Ruach apecha ne'ermu mayim." Through the wind of your nostrils, ne'ermu mayim. The mayim was ne'ermu. What does ne'ermu mean? What does that word mean? Rashi says it's from the word arima, a pile. It piled up the water, stacked up the water, like it says, kmo neid nozlim. That it ended up being like a wall. Unklus has a different answer. He says it's chakima. There was some wisdom that was put into the sea. Then he's explanation. The Vilna Gaon has a very nice idea to explain that. Okay, but they're struggling. What does this word ne'er mumayim? So a beautiful answer from Nachal Eliyahu. Rabbi Wolf got me into that sefer. And he says as follows. Ner mumayim means from the word mirma. Ner mus from the word mirma. Mirma means like a trick. So v'ruach hapecha ner mumayim means that with the wind of your nostrils, ner mumayim, the mind tricked. They tricked the mitzrim to follow them into the sea. Okay. Now, it sounds a little funny though. Why would the mitzvim? Okay, I understand. You know, there was a very strong wind, but like, it just had the makos. They just makos b'choros. You know, they were just zapped big time. And now they saw this. Like, you needed literally not even a second to think about this to realize you should not be going in here. This is big trouble, right? So why did they go in? So the answer is because they had a bias. They had a bias that they wanted the Jews to stay in Mitzrayim. And that was it. And when someone has a bias, it's very, very, very hard to see something that's obvious to everyone else. And when they had to choose, and they had to make a decision, should we go or should we not go, their bias covered up their ability to see things clearly. Okay, it's well known that Einstein, a very smart guy, as far as I'm told, and he had this the theory of relativity, and he believed that the earth was static. And then, in the early 1930s, there was a telescope, the Hubble telescope, that was used and found and noticed by looking into this telescope, they saw that the earth was expanding. Now this was a big boo-boo for Einstein. It was against the universe was expanding, and his whole thing was that it's static. Okay, he had to, gravity had to balance out with whatever. Okay, I can't really explain it. But he thought it was static. And they proved, and they saw, that the universe was expanding. So they invited him to come to see the Hubble telescope. Come, you gotta see it yourself. It took him almost 10 years to bring himself to go look at the telescope. Now he's a genius. Right? He's probably smarter than anyone that we ever know. But he couldn't bring himself to look into the telescope. He worked for so many years, slaved, worked out mathematical equations to explain his theory, and then when it was right there, all he had to do was look at it, he couldn't bring himself to go. And he didn't, until many, many, many years later, and then he had to adjust this whole thing. How could that be? The answer is very obvious. Because when you have a bias, and you worked so hard at something for so long, and you thought it's right, and you want it to be right, to be able to give that up is very, very, very hard. And that's something that we deal with every single day on different levels. Some of us, our whole life, we had a dream, we want this or this or this, or we want to have this type of home, we want to live this type of lifestyle, we want to have this type of amount of money in my bank. We've had things and we've built and layered on top of each other in order to be successful in the future. And then all of a sudden we get a shift. Something's clear to us, and now we have to make a new decision. We have to change direction, we have to change focus. But we have a bias. Deep inside us, we want something else, or we think something else, and we're not able to go ahead and see what's blinked in front of our eyes. And this is going to happen forever. With everything, with raising children, with marriage, it's always, we always have to make very, very big decisions. And we all have biases. That's the bottom line. That's the way we're created. The question is, can we be aware and cognizant that we have these biases? If we think that, you know, I'm doing this for the right reason, so then, if you're biased, you really think you're doing the right thing. You're not going to see it. So we always have to be careful. This is no matter how great of a person you are. And the people in this room are quite great. So no matter how great you are, you always have to be checking yourself. checking yourself with a third party, a second party, someone else sometimes. You bounce it off of them. It could be a mentor, it could be a good friend, someone that is going to be able to see things clearly. This is my decision process. This is why I think this, this is why I think this, why I think this. Is there something that I'm missing? Is there something that, you know, I'm playing a game because I don't want it to happen? We have to be honest with ourselves. As long as we're seeking truth, so we have to realize that we're born with biases. And it's built up inside us. Paro missed the boat. Einstein couldn't bring himself to do it. Doesn't matter how smart you are. It's irrelevant. It's something that we're all born with, all have it in ourselves. So the question is going to be, can we make that happen? So we always have to check ourselves when we're doing our self-introspection. I mentioned earlier today, the 15 minutes a day, or the hour a day, whichever direction you're going to go. Whenever you're thinking, and you have that quiet time, and you're thinking, one of the things you have to be checking on, is there a bias in me that's pushing me in the wrong way? Very often we'll find that it is. And there's nothing wrong with that, because that's normal. But then, it's easier, at least once you notice it, and you recognize it, it's much easier to go ahead and push forward and get out of it. So my bracha to all of us is that first of all, we should recognize that we have the biases, and then we should be able to make our decisions noting that we have it in order so we can get the best decisions for us to be most successful people. Shavua Tov.